10 minutes after 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning. Hello, it's 30. Let me just minimize this thing that's blocking my temperature because it's annoying me. It's 36 degrees, so we're really warming up. We've got guests in the studio again from the Wilson Medical Center. I've got Janice Reese. She's the Marketing and Foundation Director. Good morning, young lady.
Good morning, Bill.
And we've also got Lori Gore, an occupational therapist at the medical center. How are you today, young lady?
I'm good, thank you.
Could you pull that microphone a little closer to you there?
Just like that.
There, yeah, a little bit closer. Let's get it right up there because there we go. Now we're set. Now you look like a radio professional. And this is Occupational Therapy Month, the month of April. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay, so what is, I mean, I know what it is. You know what it is. But chances are the listeners don't know exactly what is meant by occupational therapy. They know physical therapy. And occupational therapy sounds like it might be in the same ballpark, but is it?
Well, it is pretty similar. A lot of people, you know, I'll go in to do their evaluation and they'll say, well, I don't want to get a job. And I have to explain that it's not just about getting a job. We work with all different kinds of people to help
I hurt
them.
Myself on purpose.
All different kinds of people to help them get better at being able to do the different things in their daily life. So anything like an injury, an illness, or just a disability that they might have already. So
somebody who had a stroke, for instance, and
right.
they just want to get back to the ordinary as close as they can to the their former quality of life, the things they can and can't do.
Right. And we really look at like what things are important to them. So sometimes we look similar to physical therapy. We'll do exercises and things. Other times we actually do the activity that the person wants to be able to do and teach them different ways to do it or use that activity mm-hmm. to help fix whatever they're missing.
Right. And you don't really, it's like they say, you don't miss the water till the well runs dry. You don't really miss those automatic things that you were able to do, like buttoning a shirt.
Right.
Or just like doing a belt buckle and that sort of thing until you
yep.
lose the, or you're hampered in the use of your hands and arms and that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yeah, a lot of people will tell me it's all the little things that they take for granted. And they're like, I didn't realize that I needed my thumb that much or this or that. Like I just recently had a lady who was like, I can't work my can opener.
Mm-hmm.
And she never thought that was going to be a complaint.
The
you
cats
know?
Complained incessantly. Mom can't open the can opener. Send her to OT. What is the basic difference then between physical therapy and occupational therapy? I mentioned to you before we went on the air that I had a torn rotator cuff some mm-hmm. years ago. And I used to refer to PT as permanent torture.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but it really was useful in getting the full range of motion back in my shoulder. So what's the difference between that and OT?
Well, so OTs also see people who might have a torn rotator cuff or had a shoulder replacement, things like that. So that's why I say sometimes we do look similar. But PTs tend to deal with purely the physical part of it, restoring the range of motion and the strength. OTs do that
mm-hmm.
and make sure that you can use your rotator cuff now for the things that are important to you. So like being able to reach and comb the back of your
right.
hair, put your glasses on, the little things that you don't think a rotator cuff has anything to do with.
Right.
Yeah.
My physical therapist would have fit in perfectly in the Spanish Inquisition. So that was a lot of fun. Okay, how does one become an occupational therapist?
Well, you would ask me a question that I don't know as much about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
How did you
become an occupational therapist?
Well, I became an occupational therapist in New Zealand, so I did my training there. Mm-hmm. I actually grew up in New Zealand.
Really? It doesn't show in your voice at all.
I've lived here 22 years.
It'll do it, yeah.
Yeah. So back then, when I did my training, you just had to have your bachelor's. I went through a program that they squished the 4 years and all your training, like fieldwork training, into 3 years. So most of us about had mental breakdowns through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to get your master's to be an occupational therapist, and then they're moving towards the doctorate program.
Right.
So
Wilson, let me ask you this, Janice, at the Wilson Medical Center. You've got OTs that work in different settings. You've got them in the outpatient clinic, home health. Are you looking for OTs now? Or
I think we
I think
we've got all of our positions right now filled. And actually, we also have occupational therapy assistants that mm-hmm. help Lori. She goes in and does a lot of basically diagnosing what needs to happen for that patient. And then you have assistants that help with actually going through and helping them help that patient get back to where they need to be so that they can continue on with life. We are looking, though, for physical therapists. We still need that position filled. Mm-hmm. We do have a physical therapist that I know that position is needing.
Yeah.
And we also provide speech therapy in the rehab center.
Right.
So we actually have three areas that we can provide. So there's the physical therapy, occupational therapy, and then our speech therapy.
I have a nephew who's a speech therapist.
Yeah. And that's really needed as well. And so they can help with things. And they all kind of work together. And that's what's great about our rehab center that we have. And we can do inpatient, as you said, and outpatient services, and also home health that we are available. So, and Lori, do you work in settings that are in the home or outpatient area or kind of a combination?
So for Wilson Medical, I work in the outpatient and do the inpatient services. And we have another occupational therapist and another CODA or occupational therapy assistant that they do the home health side. So I have an assistant that helps me with the hospital and carrying out the plans of care on the outpatient side.
Okay, we have a couple specific areas we wanted to mention today, like feeding therapy. Who thinks of that? I mean, look at a guy like me. Am I ever going to need help stuffing my yap with food? No, I mean, I'll put my face in the plate before I let that happen. But what is feeding therapy and who might need that kind of service?
Well, the specific type of feeding therapy that I'm trained in is, well, I shouldn't say that. Mostly with children, that's what I've mostly done most recently. However, say you had a stroke, you might need help with mm-hmm. feeding therapy. So speech therapists, they look at the swallowing side. Occupational therapists, we don't go there. We help you get your food to your mouth.
And the speech therapist gets it the rest of the way.
Well, we also can work on, occupational therapists can also work on chewing.
Okay.
And moving your tongue around if you're trained that way. Mm-hmm. So I am. I've done oral motor training and sensory-based feeding therapy training, which is more for, like, with the kids that I work with. But, yeah, once it gets back here and I'm ready to swallow it, that's
then it's
a
their problem.
Yeah, I'm not touching that.
Well, I know with Parkinson's disease, there's a little delightful thing that happens where the epiglottis, which is that flap that keeps food or water from getting into your larynx, mm-hmm. tends to be a little delayed sometimes. So you take a sip of water, next thing you know, you're spitting it out because it went into your lungs. That's mm-hmm. something the speech therapist can help.
Yeah, that would be speech therapy.
Yeah, my nephew explained to me you got to like dip your chin when you're swallowing.
Right, the
because,
chin tuck.
Yeah, your epiglottis isn't as fast as the water is.
Yeah.
Okay, what's lymphedema therapy? First, tell us what lymphedema is.
So lymphedema, some people have it like from birth. They might not necessarily see it at birth, but their limbs or it can happen like your whole trunk can swell too. But a lot of times the patients that we see, it's usually because their lymph nodes are squished or removed or something like that.
A blockage of the lymphatic drainage system?
So your lymph fluid is supposed to flow around your body. It doesn't have a pump like your heart pumps your blood.
Right.
Lymphatic fluid is supposed to move around and it helps you fight infection and things like that. But when things mess up, then you end up with a swollen leg or a swollen arm. It puts you at risk for infection because your skin will actually have little micro tears in it.
Yeah.
It makes it hard to get your clothes on or find shoes to fit. There's a bunch more to it. And so my assistant, David, and myself, we're both trained in how to do lymphedema therapy. So there's special massage that we do to unblock those lymph nodes and then help move the fluids to help restore that flow. And then we do special bandaging too to help reduce the size of your limb.
Okay.
So you have lymph nodes then that are in maybe your legs, if that, because usually that's where you're wrapping. Is that correct, or do you wrap other areas in your body?
We do wrap other areas. I recently had a patient who had lymphedema in her trunk after a mastectomy. So we don't wrap that because you have to be able to breathe.
Yeah, that's try to getting through a day without that.
Yeah, but so we do the massage and help measure for a compression garment, so like a tank top that helps hold everything in. A lot of the patients that I see really are legs, and they're not always because of a cancer problem. It might be a venous issue, like they're not getting good blood flow. Or they're not moving as much, because that's how that fluid is pumped, is
right.
By movement and by the pressure changes in your body from breathing. So some of my patients who aren't breathing as well also get swollen limbs. So like if you're sitting, you've got lymph nodes behind your knees, those get squished. Squished, okay. Being not the real professional word, but compressed or impinged. So we also have ones at our hips and our in our groin, and so when we're sitting a lot, which a lot of the people that I see do, then they're impinging those, and so they get swollen somewhere down the chain.
Mm-hmm. So Bill, we have a wound care center, and so do you see a lot of our patients from wound care sometimes, or if they need that?
Mm-hmm. We haven't so much recently, I used to work at Wilson Medical back in 2014. Mm-hmm. I took a little break and came back just last year. So we used to have a very close relationship with, and we still do, I just mean we just haven't had as many patients. Yeah. But it also helps their wounds heal faster if we can do that, improve the lymphatic flow and put the bandages on. So
okay. Janice, if folks have more questions about occupational therapy and the services you provide at the Wilson Medical Rehabilitation Center, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call Wilson Medical Center at 620-325-2611. And then also, the Rehab Center does have a direct line. And that, Lori, I don't know if we may end up
I think
testing me there, but... It is 620-325-2255.
2253, I have
here. 53.
Okay, sorry.
Not that I'm second guessing you. I want to make it sound like I know what I'm talking about. You know?
I didn't have that one quite memorized. I have this little dial button that I can look at.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've all gotten so lazy thanks to the iPhone, haven't we?
Very true.
I know.
You don't even know your own phone number anymore. Somebody says, what's your phone number? Oh, hang on. Let me see here.
Okay. Well, you can call the 2611, 325-2611 number, and they can definitely connect you with the rehab center.
Okay, anything else we want to add this morning, ladies?
So, well, I kind of wondered, you mentioned something about sensory when we were talking about the feeding,
mm-hmm.
And I find that kind of interesting, and actually I thought maybe more people might want to know a little bit more about that, and the reason why is because I didn't know this, but I have a niece, actually a great niece, mm-hmm. that...
She's a wonderful niece.
She's a cutie. But she has some sensory issues, and I kind of knew that they're... What kind of sensory issues can they have with feeding that people don't want to... The little kids don't want to...
Well, It's much more than just, a lot of people think they don't like the texture of the food, or they think that they're just being kind of bratty and don't like the taste of the food. And like, you know, because kids, they don't have the communication skills to tell you, well, this looks terrible to my face and is making me just, you know, feel cringy inside. They can't tell you that. So they say, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of parents will hear their kids start refusing a whole bunch of different foods, and then they end up with this very limited amount of foods that they'll eat. And sometimes it's, like I said, they don't like the look of it. Like, and it's not just that they don't like the look of it. It's disturbing to them. They don't like the sensation of touching it. They don't like the sensation of how it feels on their teeth.
The texture.
Like, I can't handle water chestnuts. Don't give me those. They squeak when you bite through them. Ugh.
See, I know people on the autism spectrum who don't like it, not because of how it tastes, but because of the texture, how it feels.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes we even think it's a texture thing, and it's actually a jaw strength or a tongue strength issue that... To somebody who's not trained, they don't see that. So they think, oh, she just doesn't like anything crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, she just likes things that are really, really soft that she can mush up with her tongue.
Right.
She doesn't have to chew them. But with your autism spectrum, they often have a lot of sensory issues. You can also have sensory issues, though, and not be on the spectrum, too. And so sometimes even the chewing of your own food or somebody else chewing their food, that bothers children, the noise of it. And what we don't think about is the noise of the food that you eat changes with every bite you take. It's not the same all the way through the chewing process. And so we don't think about all those different changes that that little body is having to regulate and make adjustments for to be able to manage.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I just found it really interesting that, you know, and a lot of people don't think about how sensory can be kind of an interesting reason. It's like, boy, I love food. So...
Yeah, look at me. You know, I remember once I was at a restaurant and the waitress wanted to know if I wanted whipped cream on my pie. I looked at her very seriously. I said, do I look like somebody who wouldn't like whipped cream on his pie?
Right. But I know that for kids, you know, there may be parents out there that actually, you know, like, well, maybe that is the reason why they're not wanting to eat. And so maybe they need to have an assessment done by an occupational therapist.
Do more than scratch the surface. See if you can get to the bottom. Right. And not just being snotty little brats. There might just be a real reason for all of this.
That's exactly right, yes.
All right, anything else we want to touch on really quick? Or all right, well, Janice Reese, Marketing and Foundation Director at the Wilson Medical Center, and Lori Gore, Occupational Therapist. Thank you so much for being with us here this morning.
Well, thanks for having us come in today, Bill. We appreciate it.
Look forward to next time. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.